Hilliard Lyons is proud to become a part of Baird, a trusted financial services firm that shares our commitment to the community. I'm Jeff Main, branch manager with Hilliard Lyons. You can learn more about Baird and our new partnership at HilliardToBaird.com.
All right, here we go. Hour number two. I am so distracted today. There's so many wonderful things going on. We have the Pacers rolling right now, live in Orlando in the bubble, scrimmaging against the Trailblazers. We have the golf on in the background, as we do on every Thursday. So there's no excuse. Baseball, I'm excited tonight. What shirt do I have on?
You have on a, is that?
You familiar with that logo?
Is that Washington?
No, it's the New York Yankees. It's one, they've only been around since 1903.
Well, I didn't know
Gee
that.
Gee whiz.
Well, hey.
You can't get strawberry shortcake. You can't recognize the Yankees logo.
I can't even read it from where I'm sitting.
Oh, my. Well, I guess we're socially distanced.
Yeah, I get
so that's
my trifocals.
Good. That's good. That are your telescope.
Yeah.
So. Keith Klein is here. I'm Mike Glasscott. Thank you for being with us. News, sports, talk, 98.7 AM 1370 and WGCLradio.com. Hour number two of the Glass in the Afternoon radio program. Distraction Thursday, but it's great to have all the stuff going on. But we have plenty of stuff locally to get to as well. And Mick Renheisen, the deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington, is waiting patiently on the Zoom feed. But we have to get you a forecast. As well as it's nice today, kinda, but yes, that's the but. There's always a but in our forecast with the weekend rolling along. 87 downtown feels like 92. The good news is, Keith, the humidity is burning off. Remember when we were in the 60? Now we're in the mid 50%.
Good.
Well, that's we're moving the right direction. So that is good. What are we looking at for the weekend? Well. A little bit different. 88 and 64 on Friday with sunshine, just a 10% chance. 90 on Saturday, wow. 68's the low, so we get warmer. And then on Sunday, 91 and 71, which will be hot and steamy for most of the day before we start next week, 89. The good news about the work week all next week is 80s all work week before jumping back into the 90s on the weekend. And the other good news we have for you, we've put enough rain in the box. We have extra. We are over an inch of what we usually get in the month of July, and we still have, what, 7 full days to go. So that is good news. Remember, we were short in June. In the last day and a half of June, we caught up quickly. So it's a good news, bad news things. But we'd like it spread out over 31 days so we don't have 3 weeks of drought, then an inch of rain, 3 days of drought, then an inch of rain. But no one asked me. So that's the problem. Updated forecast, live radar, find it all at WGCL. Before we get to Mick Renheisen, the deputy mayor, the headlines today are there was a deadly shooting at a Bloomington apartment complex, Keith.
Yes.
This was on South Walnut Springs Drive. A 28-year-old man was killed due to a gunshot wound in the neck. That's never good in any way, shape, or form. And once we have more details on this case, we will pass them along to you. So that's the big Bloomington news story today that's making statewide news, sadly. And Mick Renheisen, the deputy mayor, is here. Good afternoon. How are you? Yeah, I never like starting with things like that, but that's... Yeah, and it's just, we've been having to pass on those stories is nothing fun to do here either. Usually we start off with the golf, and they're at TPC Twin Cities up there in lovely Blaine, Minnesota, 78 degrees, sunshine. Bo Van Pelt is 5-under and 1 off the lead. Mick, who would your pick be? How was your pick last week, and who are your picks this week? T22, yes. It's a little quiet. You get a pass this week. You get a hall pass. You get a bye this week. It's your bye week. How about that? Tony Finau is six under par with Ryan Moore and a couple of others, leading the early flight. And as we mentioned, Bo Van Pelt, who just, I guess, is feeling a lot better. He's probably on his last exemption, Mick, and is out there today. He was five under through eight. So we wish all the Van Pelts and the Bombas, they're probably watching this afternoon. So that would be fun to see Bo Van turn the corner here. And, yes, it's a quiet field. Only, I think, four of the top 30 are playing in the TPC's Twin Cities. Next week, we'll be back at it. It's the World Golf Championships FedEx St. Jude Classic at TPC Southwind in Memphis. So we know we'll have the top 50 in the world at that one, or however many decide to come. No Adam Scott, I know, so we'll be 49 to 50 at the best. And then the week after that, it's off to San Francisco. The TPC Harding Park for the first major of the year. The PGA Championship. None of these events will have any fans, just like the Pacers and Portland Trailblazers aren't having any fans in the bubble in Orlando. So we've got you caught up on everything we need to know there. Mick, it's time to get out. What was that old? Picture pages. Time to get your crayons and your pencils. We have ordinance on top of ordinance on top of executive order on top of everything molds together, melds together a little bit later. But the city has gotten ahead of the county in the immediacy of the orders. And as we told everyone last hour, we've added Upland Brewing Company on 11th Street. They are closed indefinitely as one of their staff members had COVID. So we're trying to get ahead of this. The numbers have not been good recently. They have not been good at the state level either. That has to be the main genesis for you guys not waiting till the 31st, I would assume.
Of their date for enacting the bar and gathering size restrictions, which will be July 31st for them and effective today at 12:01 p.m. for us. And that was really to give the establishments that will obviously have some student traffic increasing as we get closer to when students come back, which we've already seen some indications of that, and expect more of that in the coming weeks as campus classes start late August, but leases start August 1st, and we see a lot of return to students at that time of year. And we just want to give everybody a chance in that business to get ready for what they need to do in advance. And we want to be able to go out and help. So, you know, the logical question, one that gets asked a lot is, you know, how is this going to get enforced? How is all of this going to get enforced? And that's a fair question. So we're going to take a stab at it for our 8 days before we work hand in hand with the county with what they'll do. And we've obviously been talking to them. We don't want to have two entirely different paths for enforcement with what they'll want to do. So we are, again, coordinating these things. But for the first 8 days, you could expect to see this from the city. Some visits from some city staff. We have economic and sustainable development that interfaces with our business community a lot to work with the establishments to try to get them as prepared as they can be and help with some campaign materials. We did this for the smoking ordinance 20 years ago, and voluntary compliance is really what we're all looking for. And I'll make a prediction that 80%+ of the people will voluntarily comply. It'll be the 20% that will be managing if they choose not to. So the first part is just to continue the public education campaign, help with as much collateral material, window clings, things on tabletops at bars and restaurants that remind people, wear a mask, keep socially distant, all the things we've been saying for months. So we want to do that. We will have some site visits with some staff, including some of our law enforcement staff, but not our police department first. We have a fire inspection team, and we have fire administrative staff that can get out and say, you know, you're supposed to be at 50% of capacity. You look like you're more than that. And you also have tables too close together or whatever. So we're going to be visiting randomly some places to keep some eyes on things to make sure that people are doing what they're supposed to be doing. We also expect the IU Police Department to help, as they have been wonderfully helpful in the early stages of COVID back in the spring with the parties that sort of spring up in student rented housing around campus. So appreciate the university support there as they did then. They're going to help us try to watch and monitor for those as well. A lot of this is going to be complaint driven. So if, you know, you see something, kind of say something, we're going to have a hotline number, 349-3501 for these first 8 days that people can call. It's not going to be an immediate response. So don't expect, you know, 5 seconds after you call, we send somebody down to resolve it. But we will at least be collecting complaints. monitoring that hotline and then going out to the business establishments to let them know, hey, we've been getting complaints that you're not doing one of these things that you're supposed to be doing, and then work with the business to try to remedy that. That hotline number will transfer over to the county when they start. So our phone complaints will go be fed into the county system, and we'll work with the county on that. You know, worst case scenario, if people are just defiant, there's a big party that springs up and it could be a super spreader event. I'm just using that as an example. We could get a court order and shut it down, right? We could do some things that are we'd rather not do. But if we have to do it to protect our community, then those are things that would obviously escalate to that level. That won't be the first response. Same thing for a bar or restaurant or other establishment that simply is not complying with what's supposed to be enforced, up to and including, we said in the press release when we announced that we were going to do this early, closure of the business is a possibility. Again, not something we want to do, not something we're going to go out and look to do, but we want to make sure people understand the seriousness of the situation. And I'll point to this. If some people out there still think this is a big hoax and we don't have to do any of this, look at Europe. We were talking about Europe when all this started. Look what happened in Spain and in Italy. You hear anything about them now? All they did was what we've asked people to do here voluntarily: wear a mask, socially distance, and use good hygiene. So we kind of know how to fix this from being spreading any worse. We just have to have people comply. And our goal is to be voluntarily asking people to comply so they can help all of us. So that's the plan for the city in the next 8 days. That'll dovetail into what the county plans to do starting July 31st.
Mick Renheisen, the deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington, joins us every Thursday just after 4:05. Indianapolis Mayor Joe Hogsett has announced a new round of restrictions Thursday to help spread the curb of the coronavirus. Indianapolis, masks are mandatory. Social gatherings, you can't exceed 50. Indoor religious ceremonies, 50%. Bars and nightclubs that don't serve food closed until August 12th. That's what Indianapolis has had to do. 50% capacity restaurants indoors. All restaurants closed between midnight and 5 a.m., gyms at 25%, and sports and entertainment venues no more at 25% capacity. And the only reason that is there is for the Indianapolis 500, period, end of sentence. So you think we got it bad. You can always point to somebody else that has it worse. But, Mick, that's going to put that's a template for what could – we don't want to go back to that.
Well, absolutely not. And, you know, again, just sort of citing learning from others so we don't repeat the same mistake. We have kids from Indianapolis that will come here to school in a week or two, right? So if Indianapolis is a hotspot, it's not like Bloomington can act like we're in our own little bubble, because that bubble is about to be burst with people from all over the country, all over the world. And we need those folks, obviously, to behave, but they're not the only reason that this could spread. I mean, we've seen it spread in the restaurant industry. Mike, you were talking about that a little earlier, and I've got friends I know that run restaurants, and they've admitted it's a big challenge for them. Their environment, the social interaction that happens amongst the staff, it's really a difficult environment. And so we're seeing places closing because they can't keep their employees healthy.
And
we're not immune from these things.
You're absolutely right. And the other part is that the picture that we'll paint, all these athletes that came back to Indiana University had to be tested and test negative before they could get together and work out. Since they have been here, they have tested positive because they've interacted with people who are here. Well, this isn't hard to get. We want to make a deal about it. Well, they're going to bring it to us. It's here. We have it here. So we have to
I'd
do
like
it.
I'd like to offer, too, that instead of, you know, we don't want to just berate young people or anybody about this. You know, we kind of know, again, I'll go back to, we kind of know what works. Let's just all resolve to do it for a while, and then further actions won't have to be taken, and dramatic economic cataclysmic and other public health elements won't have to be the result of us ignoring or deciding we don't want to do this inconvenience for a while. You know, just imagine, as much as the students coming back is a threat, if they're gone again, it's a huge problem for all of us. It's a huge problem for our economy, for people who work with anything to do with the university. It would just be devastating. We felt just the beginning of that last year at the end of the spring semester. We certainly don't want to see that. Hey, we want young people to be young people. You can actually socialize responsibly. You just have to keep socially distant, wear a mask, and don't bring a bunch of your friends and have a loud party where you're screaming and yelling.
Well, that's not any fun, Mick. That's boring.
Well, they're going to have to adjust their fun quotient a little bit. They can still socially get. We know it's important for young people to be social. And let's just acknowledge they're going to be. So how can we do it safer? And so I just don't want to beat on the students. It's not fair to do that. We just need to work together as a community, and they are in our community, to minimize the possibility of it spreading. And then they'll lose exactly what they came here for, which is to be able to be with other people their age and socialize and learn.
And everybody has to wear a mask. And if you can carry out, carry out. And if you don't have to go somewhere, you don't have to go somewhere. But we've seen that loosening up and getting back to normalcy has not helped anything at any age group, at any business level, or anything else. It was a short-term help. And now here we are. So that's what we're going to do. And as we move forward, we get closer and closer to August, Mick. I saw the sign in the garage today that said, hey, regular garage hours are going to be back on August 3rd. So we are going to start getting back to normal in some ways and shapes, but we know with everybody coming back, so we need to pay attention. I know you have the parking zones. You can go down to the city hall and get those going.
Get your permits.
So those are all the things that say, hey, we're getting back to normal.
That's right. And there's some things we're doing as part of the mayor's recovery forward plan that will, you know, continue to unveil as time goes on. The first of those was a rather big topic last night at the city council meeting. And that was the we'll call it our local stimulus and our recovery forward plan, just under $2 million in three kind of buckets of expenses that would be spent this year to try to help our local economy in a variety of ways in sustainable quality of life initiatives, like lowering the cost of energy in our built environment, improving some of our mobility options with side path and sidewalk investments, improving our local food access by considering the launch of a farm store locally, not to be confused with the farmer's market, because we have those. Another round of Jack Hopkins social service funding, some arts community recovery grants, some investment in digital equity, which I'm sure board member Keith Klein will be happy to hear. That's part of our package because we know we have students who don't have access to the internet, and that sets them further behind in their learning. In good jobs that we want to create, we've got some coding school things we'd like to help at the mill. They've got a program where they can start to train people how to code. There's apparently a huge shortage of coders around the country, and we can maybe invest in that to get some folks locally trained in that. Some life science job support. We know we have a great life science business sector here. Some collaboration for those that are hard to employ, like Centerstone, like we work with at our parks department. And then in a third bucket of affordable home ownership, some down payment assistance to get some people under a certain percentage of income the opportunity to maybe buy their first home, because we know homeownership leads to stability and wealth and equity and helps with social and racial equity as well. So these are things we're trying to invest in with this package that we unveiled to the city council last night for the first discussion before the sustainability committee. It'll still get heard two more times, August 5th and then August 12th, before it's finally decided. And that's just another round of things we're trying to do to help stimulate our economy locally.
Mick, let me tell the people we're talking to Mick Renneisen, the deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington, and a little bit what the city is doing. When the mayor was on Tuesday on this program, he talked about they were going to have the movie in the park, which they've already done. They were supposed to have something at Switchyard Park with a concert, but somebody in the group tested positive, and so they canceled that. But let me kind of devil's advocate. Should the city be doing those kinds of gatherings, or what do you do to prevent you being the source of some of this stuff?
Yeah, that's a great question, Keith. I think what we're trying to do is model what a good managed event should look like and how you can do them and keep people socially distant and safe. And so for those events, we have a reservation system that you can sign up online. You have to get a ticket. You used to be just be able to walk into the park, show up at a concert, lay your blanket down, watch the concert. Concerts are still free. We just ask people to reserve their space. We put circles on the grass in the park so that we can keep families, members of a group of people who live in the same household, doesn't have to be families, in their pods, if you will. And each of those pods is kept socially distant from another pod. So we're just trying to show people, hey, this can happen. You can still have a life. You can still go outside. You got to wear a mask now, but you can sit in your pod, watch safely a concert outside, and enjoy the park and enjoy the experience with your family. So We'll be doing that through the rest of our concert series throughout the summer and fall, and hopefully people will see, okay, there are ways that we can do this and learn from maybe the parks people how to do it safely.
Yeah, you better get used to it, because it's not going to be a free-for-all anytime soon. You've seen the drive-in concerts and everything else that goes on, or drive-in everything. Yeah, just you're going to have to get used to it, because, as you mentioned, life doesn't stop. You have to just live it a smarter, different face-masked way.
The next of those, by the way, is this Sunday, and that's a concert by Down to Funk and Flashback to Never at 5:30 in Bryant Park. Again, same thing, 150 people limit, but if you get a hold of the park staff by calling 349-3700 between 8 and 5, you can reserve your ticket, or you can also do that online at the park's website.
The mayor also said that they were completing some touch-up work on the splash pad. Is that all taken care of?
If you would have went down there and got the strawberry shortcake, I would have known that question.
I'll go afterwards.
That is, and there are still some punch list items at the park in various sections that are being completed, but it's almost completely done. They'll be working on those punch list things over the next couple of weeks just to get them finalized, but we'll look forward to having a nice some type of ceremony in the fall that fully shows the completed park. But look, the park's getting used a lot already.
Yeah, let me ask you about that, Mick. Are you having any problems with, I've seen in other places, in fact, in our neighborhood, we have a little basketball court, and there people are concerned about how many people are showing up there, and you've got a lot of places where people can get pretty close to each other in sporting activities.
You know, that's a great observation, Keith, because that was one of the first things you'll recall we discussed back in the early days. We kind of let people tell us whether they were going to behave or not, and they didn't. So we took the nets off. Well, that didn't work. We took something to put over the rims, and that didn't work. So we just had to keep managing around that. And so now we may have to go back to some of those practices. Now, they could physically go play if they wore masks, but if they can't keep themselves apart, 6 foot apart from each other, then and they won't be able to play in five-on-five basketball, then that's something that probably will have to go back to where we were back in the spring.
Yeah, they don't live in the bubble like the NBA guys. It's a lot different. Not a little different. Yeah. It's a lot different. COVID has hit the city again. A couple more cases, Mick. All you can do is all you can do, right?
Hey, there was just an announcement that the U.S. has hit 4 million.
Well, that's not any good.
Right.
We can't blame Mick for that.
I think, you know, we have 750 full-time employees and another 400 to 500 seasonal employees, and we've been very transparent about the numbers when we've had a case. And you know, I think it helps get other people to pay attention that were previously somewhat resistant to why they had to wear masks. Now they know why. Now they have no choice but to wear them. The city initiated that policy a couple of weeks ago, actually almost a month ago now, for its employees. That was a requirement. And yet they're still going to happen. We don't know if they're happening as a result of interaction in the workforce. It could be happening in other places. But contact tracing, we do contact tracing and make sure we isolate, follow CDC protocols.
And the other thing we're following, obviously, is here locally. I saw this and made me laugh. City of Bloomington invites residents to adopt a drain.
That's right. Good story.
Not a dog, not a cat, a drain. Well, I bet it eats less than the dog or the cat. That's the good news.
You know, this has been a long time campaign at the utilities department. Just to remind people, you know, I don't think many of us think about where does that stuff go when I dump it down the drain, whether that's in your home or outside in a storm drain or whatever. It goes to the same place. It goes to the water treatment facility, and then it goes out into our streams after it's treated. So, you know, we're trying to, again, educate the public. You're not supposed to dump paint and other things that don't belong in the waste stream and the water.
Gasoline, motor oil.
That's a big one. You just mentioned a couple of them. Those the big offenders are usually the gasoline that just people go, well, it's down the drain. Where's that go? And it goes someplace that has to be treated, and then it goes in our waterways again. So that's not a good thing. We're trying to get some people to adopt drains in their neighborhoods and areas so that they can help us better mitigate some of those things from happening and also keep them clean. Keep them clean, then stormwater. You won't have flooding and other things in your yard.
I think that's the important part of all that, Mick, because, the rain we had the last couple of days, all of a sudden you've got grass clippings and twigs and all kinds of other things that can be blocking that drain. And a street that's never flooded can flood easily. But now all you're asking is go out there, check the thing. If there's some debris on it, move it out.
I do that.
And do that. Now, by the way, do I get like a adoption certificate for my drain?
I will personally give you one if you send me a picture of you cleaning the drain out front of your place. Well, hey, look, I am cursed. My park staff would say this, and all my staff at the city now, all the department heads that interact with me know that I can't stand weeds and debris and trash anywhere. I can't stand it. My eye is drawn to it wherever it is. And so, you know, you can literally clean a drain one day and the next day it looks like you didn't do a thing. And that's just simply because they're designed to be in low spots where the water runs and picks up whatever is in the gutter system. And it ends up getting stuck on that drain cover and then it blocks the flow of water to it. So, you know, yes, if neighbors can help adopt a drain and help us with that, that'd be great.
Well, on the promo that you
had.
It's
not like a Cabbage Patch Kid, Keith. Well, you'll be fine.
The promo that I saw was pretty cool because you had a little kid. Now, you know, think about that. Your kids can get involved in that kind of thing. Get a little wagon, put the debris in the wagon, all that kind of stuff. And I also noticed in the picture, and help me on this, are you putting decals on drains that say don't do that kind of thing?
That's right. We're trying to point out the things you should not be dumping into the drain, and that's what the decal says. It's a little. Okay. It's actually a metal. It's a fixed metal piece so that it's more permanent there, and that's part of the program as well. When you see those, that's what you're noticing.
I like the fact that you could get the family involved. The kids can be doing something positive, and it's easy to do, and it's in the neighborhood.
That's right. Get them to work. Get off the internet. Get out there and adopt something.
Get outside.
Adopt some, and again, if parents are wondering, it's a lot easier to adopt a drain than it is a puppy, a rabbit, a kitten, or anything else.
You can't threaten to exchange your kid for a drain.
Well,
no matter.
We'll see about that. We'll see about that. Mick Renheisen, the deputy mayor, is our guest this afternoon, and it is time for tormenting trivia with Celeste.
Has a kind of a hodgepodge. There's no real theme today. She started out by making me think it was going to be all about fishing. And then I realized just one question is related to fishing. One of them is about trails, and one of them is about the Showers Brothers factory building.
Those things we know so much
there's
about.
There's your three areas, one question in each category.
Okay.
She's just going to throw kind of a cornucopia of questions at you today. Here's your first question. Which of the following species of fish are most abundant in Lake Lemon?
Lake Lemon.
So is it bluegill, brook silverside, gizzard shad, or largemouth bass?
Bluegill.
Keith says bluegill. What's the one after bluegill?
Brook silverside.
I knew her from school.
Yeah. Wasn't she in Clerks?
Yeah.
Mall Rats?
Did you know Gizzard Shad by any chance?
He was on the football team.
Hell of a blues guitarist.
And we all know largemouth bass.
Billy. Billy the largemouth bass. I'll go with B just to shake it up.
Okay. Well, Keith was confident. He answered right out of the box, and he was correct. It is bluegill is the most prominent fish in Lake Lemon. Yep.
Got to have your fishing license, though. You don't want to get in trouble.
My age.
Well, you get arrested for fishing.
I think they have an age limit on if you get to
you
a
You better look
age.
That up.
Oh, okay.
Do they have an age limit on what time you pick up strawberry shortcake?
Yeah.
All right. Second question about trails. In general, the Beeline Trail, not including the rail trail connection at Country Club, so just the paved Beeline from Country Club to Adams Street, is how many miles? Is it 4.5, 2.7, 3.1, or 5.3?
3.1 was the first thing that jumped out of my head before you gave the answer, so I'm going with 3.1.
Was it 4.7 or 4.5? What was that one?
4.5, 2.7,
3.1. I'll go 4.5.
Okay. And confidence pays off again for the responder who was confident. It was 3.1. Class is correct. It is now 1-1 tie. So it's not on the trivia question, but I happen to remember this from my parks days. There are 38 miles of trails in the park system. So the Beeline's 3.1 of those 38 miles. And we're always adding new trail mile legs because they're so popular in our community.
Can you do bicycles on those trails?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
You can do anything except motorized vehicles.
Okay.
Yep. Absolutely.
And then the other thing that you're doing, Mick, is adding wider paved trails over on Serra Road, which is going to start trying to connect everything almost together as well. I know that's Wason's area of expertise, but That and the one on Henderson by yes. Summit Point and South. So you all these big paths are going to start connecting all over the place, and that's exciting.
I will digress just 1 second and share with you all and our listeners that when I did the first park survey, community survey that I was responsible for as the director in 1996, and the number one response to our survey of what our residents wanted the most for us to invest in over the course of the next 5 years, because we did these in 5-year increments, you could have blown me over with a feather. I'd have never guessed the answer to this in a million years, but it was trails. It said, build trails. And every 5-year increment for my 20 years as director, that remained the number one answer. So I think, you know, it was not that hard for me to look pretty smart. All I had to do was listen to the people. They told us what they wanted. So, you know, that really was the big building trail movement started in my mind when we asked that question in 1996 and got the same answer every 5 years. And probably we get the same answer today. I know Paula McDevitt and her team are working on the next round of a survey because they're doing their master plan update this coming year. And so the community will be able to tell us again. And spoiler alert, it's going to be trails. It's going to say, now connect them all. You've been building them in all these places. Make sure you connect the dots. And that was the plan all along after we heard strongly from our community how much they value the trails. So there's a little trivia background.
No, that's it makes sense. If you don't want people to perhaps drive their cars all over the place, you have to give them other ways to be able to get around.
Well, and it's becoming more and more important now with, you know, climate change and other challenges we face. And so anyway, the little background on the trail movement.
I love it. Mick Renheisen, the deputy mayor, checking in with us here, as he always does. We only have minutes remaining on our Zoom meeting, so we have to
final question. Here's your final question. In 1966, much of the Showers Brothers Furniture Factory building was destroyed by what cause?
Fire,
flooding.
Fire on the mountain.
Yeah.
It was a fire that destroyed a significant portion of the factory. Remnants of it now still remain that we are residing in at City Hall, obviously, is a big part of that. And so is on the other side, the CFC Business Plaza at Showers, and then the county building, county offices, many of them are on the north side of Showers. And then there's a private sector operation that still has the Showers administrative building north of us. And the old Showers admin building exists still, which is in the Trades District. So that's the remnants of what was originally a much larger employment center and a lot more Showers Brothers Furniture Factory buildings than now exist. But those are the three that still remain.
And I think I learned on the trail that it burned by a fire. Don't they have a marker out there for that?
Yeah, that's right. There is a sign there that talks about that, the history.
I'm reading as I'm exercising. All right, Mick, stay cool on the weekend. Next week we'll get a garage update from you. I know you've renamed some streets and added some parking and done some zones. We'll worry about that. We'll get to that next week. Have a fantastic weekend. Stay cool, my friend. We'll talk to you next week.
Same to you all. Thank
you. Take care, Mick.